Thank you. That was nice. Good timing, too. We are near the end of our series called Ask It. We will finish up next week. So please plan on being here. The series that will follow, you're not going to want to miss. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to share it with you. As you should know by now in this series, if you've heard any of our messages, and if you haven't, please go to hammockstreetchurch.com and you can watch any of the messages you might have missed, or our YouTube channel, of course. Just type in Hammock Street Church, you'll find us. But as you should know by now, we've been exploring one important question, and it's a question that we want everyone here to get into the habit of asking before making any decision for the rest of your life. That sounds like a heavy lift, but it really isn't, because here's the question. In light of my past experience, my current circumstances, and my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for me to do? In other words, we're saying you need to ask yourself before you make any decision, particularly the big decisions, is this wise for me to do? Is this a wise decision to make? So this question goes beyond simple right and wrong, not is this the legal decision to make, or can I get away with this if I make this decision? But the question that I've given you and the question that we've been looking at will empower us and enable us to be able to live abundantly as God has designed us to do. Jesus said, I've come so they might have life and have it abundantly, have it to the full. This is God's desire for each of us, for each of his children, is to have this abundant life. Now, by this point in our series, we all can probably see how much better our lives today would be and how much less regret we would have from our past decisions and how much better our futures would be if we would just get into the habit of consistently asking this question going forward in our lives. You see, no matter how we've arrived at this moment in time where we sit now, no matter what we've been through, no matter what we've experienced to get us to today, when we look back, and I'll speak for myself, when I look back at some of the boneheaded decisions that I have made in the past, I always tell my kids, my boys are in their late 20s, and I always tell them, you know, we made boneheaded decisions too, just nobody videotaped them and put them online. So witnesses, memories as they are, if people accuse me of doing something stupid, I can always just deny it. Like, no, you can't prove that. Do you have video? No. Is there anything in writing? No. Well, then I didn't do it. But, you know, nowadays you get caught. But I look back and I think, how did I even make it here after some of the dumb things I did? And I'm not bragging about it. I'm just saying, whew, I made it. So when we think about our greatest regrets in life, we can't help but think when we look back, how could I have been so unwise? Or how to use the word we've been using, how could I have been so foolish? And when we allow ourselves to start thinking that way, we'll also see with 20/20 hindsight how we should have seen it coming, right? You ever make a mistake and then you look back and you go, I should have seen that coming, right? There were so many clues, how did I miss them? Well, he was a narcissist, or she was so wrong for me, or I couldn't afford that on my best day. What was I thinking when I bought it? Or I should have seen it coming. How could I have missed all those clues? Each of us has experienced this regret-producing phenomenon. Now, here's the thing about should have seen it coming. If you should have seen it coming, there's a good probability that there was somebody in your life who did see it coming. If you should have seen it coming, if when you look back at the situation that prompted you to make that awful decision, that unwise decision, it is very likely that there was somebody in your life who did see it coming, and either they didn't warn you, or they did warn you, but you failed to listen to them. And the reason, if they didn't warn you, the reason that they didn't is because they didn't think you would listen. So that's where we'll start our analysis. But I have a question. Why is it? Why is it that we can't see it coming, but somebody else can see it coming? Don't you hate when that happens? Does that ever happen to you? Yeah, me too. I'm guessing it happens to all of us. So why does it keep on happening? Well, here's one reason why. Emotionally charged decisions often lead to bad results. And then there's a follow-up, and nearly every big decision is emotionally charged. So when you're making a big decision, there's a lot of emotion involved, and you can make a bad decision if you're not careful. Well, why is that? Well, it's because when we're coming from an emotional place, our usual good judgment is clouded and negatively influenced by that emotion. When we are at the peak of emotion, in the middle of a storm, when you're in the middle of a storm, you can't see through the clouds. You can't see through the rain. But anybody who's not in the middle of the storm can see it very clearly. Or as Johnny Nash sang in the 1972 classic, "I can see clearly when the rain is gone." Emotions make wise decisions difficult, and every major decision involves a significant level of emotion. This is why I can do a better job, for example, at managing your money than you can. See, I won't make the impulse buys with your money that you're going to make. Do you believe me? Do you want to test that statement? All right, this is a test. If you have children, have you ever taken them to Target? I mean, if you have anybody, have you ever taken them to Target? I mean, it starts the moment you walk in the door, right? They put a bunch of cheap, kind of junky toys right up front on the low shelves, right where the kids are drawn to, and kids just rush there like bugs rushing to a porch light, and then your kid grabs a toy, and once the kid grabs a toy, it is on, and now a battle begins, and as soon as your child wraps his or her little fingers around that toy, to them, it's already their toy, and their emotions enter the picture. Now, of course, in that scenario, you're not emotionally attached to the toy. So what do you say to your child? You say, "Honey, come on, put that back. You don't need that." No, sweetie. You have one of those at home. Oh, come on. That's just a waste of your money. You're going to break it before you get to the house. And if you've said those things or something similar, you know that you're right. Like, you don't question that. You know you're right. Those statements reflect wise decision-making. Now, as for your kids, at that moment, they're living in the land of emotional decision-making, and their choices reflect it. Well, sadly, we do the same thing. We simply never outgrow the axiom that as soon as your emotions get attached to something, you are prone to make a bad financial decision. Hurry now, invest now, this offer is ending soon. Why do you think they do that? Because it raises your emotion and it gets you to do things you normally wouldn't do. If you let me hold your wallet, I'd make way better decisions about your money than you would. And you do the same for me, because financial decisions are not emotionally neutral decisions. Want to know what other decisions aren't emotionally neutral decisions? How about decisions having to do with your marriage or your relationships? In the lawyer world, divorce and custody cases, family law, those are the most difficult cases to handle as a lawyer. Because in those cases, fairness and logic always take a back seat to heated, out of control emotionalism. They are tough cases. I can remember on the few family cases I got dragged into, just dreading when the phone call came. Oh, somebody's going to be yelling at me. Someone's going to be yelling about it. It's tough. It's emotional. That's the same reason I don't consider myself a good marriage counselor, because I don't do very well with emotionalism. I'm stunted. I know that. But it makes me seem like a very uncaring marriage counselor. If you've ever come to me for marriage counseling, you've heard me say that exact thing. I really do. I put it right up front. I don't want anybody to have false ideas about it. But whenever a couple comes to me for marriage counseling, if I'm unsuccessful at persuading them to find a qualified professional, which I'll always try to do, help somebody better equipped to help them through their issues, I'll let them know up front, I am good for 3 visits and 3 visits only. On the first visit, I will listen to their issues. And I'm a good listener. I'll take notes and everything. Then they'll come back for a second visit, and I'll say, okay, here's how you can resolve your issue in a biblical way. If there's a third visit, I'm going to say to them, before we start talking, all right, did you put into practice the advice I gave you in the second visit? And if they haven't, I say, then go do that, and I send them home. And if they have, and it didn't work, then I say, go contact a professional. I can't abide if they insist on bringing up these emotional issues. I can't handle them. I'm not equipped to handle them. And people simply cannot follow a wise course of action as dictated by God when they're stuck in emotionalism. And frankly, you'd likely do the same thing. If you were to listen to someone else's relational problems, your advice to them would probably simply be, oh, you have a problem whenever you do that thing? Well, I suggest that you stop doing that thing, right? It's that simple. But we can only see it when we're not emotionally invested. When we're emotionally invested, we simply can't see those problems coming. That same logic, by the way, works for our children. When we see how somebody else's children are behaving poorly, we're just full of solutions, aren't we? If when you're a first-time parent and you're kind of standing in the grocery line and you're carrying your child in the front carrier or the back carrier in the seat, in the cart, in the buggy, and someone's saying, well, you know, you really should hold their head up and you really shouldn't let them cry like this. They're just full of solutions, aren't they? Have you ever been on an airplane where there's some bratty kid kicking your seat? Tell me you didn't think, man, if that was my kid, I'd never let him do that, right? If that was my kid, I'd put an end to that immediately. You know all about raising kids, as long as they're not your kids, as long as they're somebody else's kids. See, when you have your own kids, much of the time, you and your spouse just sit around looking at each other, just shell-shocked, with your eyes wide and your mouth open. You go, what are we supposed to do about this? I don't know. We know what everyone else should do with their kids, but we're at a loss when it comes to our own. Why is that? Because parenting is emotional, like marriage is emotional, and money is emotional. And when we look back on our decisions in those areas, and we ask ourselves, why didn't we see it? We can know that it was because of all the emotion that had clouded our judgments surrounding those relationships. So, what is the wise thing to do when emotions are high and appetites are inflamed? What does a wise person do in an emotionally charged environment where our appetites are awakened and suddenly we've got our eyes on something that we really want, or we set our heart on something or on somebody or on some event, and suddenly we have a decision to make? Well, the answer to how you make that decision wisely is one word. It's listen. Because you can't see it coming, but somebody who knows you does see it coming. Somebody close to you can see it coming, and the wise person listens. In fact, it's the pinnacle of wisdom when a person recognizes when, because of their emotional state, they're in no place to decide for themselves by themselves. Wise people recognize when they're in that emotional state and need to make an important decision that they're gonna need some sound counsel. Wise people know when they're in no condition to decide for themselves, by themselves. Now, I'm sure that every one of us here right now could think back on a bad decision that we made when we were just too emotional to recognize that we really didn't stop and think about it. And we certainly didn't go to somebody else for a second opinion. But instead, we just chose to go with the flow, and then we did the worst thing that you can do. Hear this now, because the culture will tell you differently. The worst thing you can do is follow your heart. You know how people say that, oh, follow your heart. Don't follow your heart. The heart is wicked. The heart's going to deceive you. It's always a bad idea to follow your heart. And that's what we do. We follow our heart and we end up doing the thing. And because of that, we end up looking back going, yeah, why did I do that? I should have seen it coming. Now, the key to responding to situations where you think that you might not be able to see what's coming is to listen to somebody who does. And as you might have guessed, seeing as how you're in church, you should have guessed, God has something to say about this phenomenon. So we're going to head on over to the Hebrew Bible, to the Old Testament, and we're going to have a look. And when we're looking for wisdom, there is no better person to look to than King Solomon. Just a quick review, King Solomon was the third king of ancient Israel. He was the son of the second king of ancient Israel. His name was King David, and he was the son of, Solomon was the son of King David's wife, Bathsheba. You might have heard about her also. Now, Solomon reigned during the what they call the Golden Age of Israel. It was a time when Israel had more power and more influence than they'd ever had before and than they would ever have again. And he was so successful because Solomon was wise. Solomon was appointed by God to be the wisest person who would ever live. We can go to 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. We move on a few verses, and because he, Solomon, was so wise, his fame spread to all the surrounding nations. Verse 34, from all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom. This is a big deal. Solomon was the king of Israel, and yet all the other pagan kings and all the other rulers would come to Solomon because the world, the reputation was around the world. He's the wisest person in the world. So kings from all over the world would come and listen to Solomon's wisdom. That means that when kings and other nations were making a big decision, what did they do? They went and sought out Solomon's wise input. People came from all over the known world to get an audience with King Solomon, and he was wise in every arena. 1 Kings 4, 32 and 33, Solomon spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005, and Berry Gordy only controlled about 20% of them, so he made money on these. He spoke about plant life, from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He spoke about animals and birds and reptiles and fish. I mean, Solomon knew stuff. He's the Trivial Pursuit king of his day. And because we have the Bible, guess what? We can benefit from Solomon's wisdom without having to travel across the world and camp out hoping for an audience with the king. Now, Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And he also wrote the Song of Solomon, also known as the Song of Songs. Have you ever read the Song of Solomon? If you can believe it, it's a book in the Bible about sex. In fact, the Jews believed that a man had to either be married or at least 30 years old to even read that book. That's how bawdy it is. You thought the Bible was boring, huh? It's not. Solomon also wrote the majority of the book of Proverbs. And in the book of Proverbs, Solomon gave tons of little wisdom tidbits. That's what the book of Proverbs is. Just little tiny wisdom tidbits that can help guide us as we seek to live our lives wisely. And Solomon, the wisest man in the world, said more about seeking counsel than any other ancient writer. So think about it. The man who least needed counsel, Solomon, spoke and wrote about it the most. Because the wisest man in the world knew that there are going to be situations in your life and in my life that we're not even going to see coming, but he also knew that somebody would see it coming. And if you're wise enough to bring those people into your decision-making process, you will find the clarity that you need to make the wisest decision you can make. So I just want to show you, give you an example of some of Solomon's wisdom tidbits. So here we go. We're going to go to Proverbs chapter 9, verse 9. Instruct the wise, and they will be wiser still. So you should always be ready to learn. You should always have an open mind, open hands, always willing to learn from other people. You can learn something from anybody. My grandfather used to say to me, he called me Dopey, which was my nickname, his nickname for me. It was in love. It was really wonderful. You couldn't do that these days. But my grandfather used to say to me, hey, Dopey. He was from Williamsburg in Brooklyn. He'd say, hey, Dopey. If nothing else, you could serve as a bad example. So, you can even learn from bad examples, apparently. So, instruct the wise, they'll be wiser still. Speak to, counsel, advise the wise, and they'll be wiser still. Verse 5, Proverbs 1:5. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. Do you see the theme here? It essentially means hire a consultant. Bring in a counselor. Go see a counselor. Go acquire wise counsel. How about this one? Proverbs 12:15 is one of my favorites. The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. This one means that the people who think that they know everything are not wise. The people who think that they are never wrong are wrong. They're really just what? Fools. Fools. I pity the fools. A fool will always ask, will always think that he or she is right, but a wise person, the person who listens to counsel, will make wise decisions. A wise person never thinks that they're too wise to need any outside input. How about this one? Proverbs 15:25. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Think about how enlightened that one is. Imagine that you're the smartest person that anybody knows, and you're extolling the virtues of learning from other people. That's humble. Imagine you're the most talented musician you know, and they're telling, or you're telling somebody just how much you've learned from other musicians. Everybody can learn from everybody else, even from people who aren't as talented as you are in a particular field. That seems so counterintuitive, but it's so brilliant. All this to say, the wisest man in the world said to us, here's my advice to you. Go surround yourself with many good advisors. Don't try to do life alone. Don't ever get to a place in your life where you think you're so wise and so smart that you can see all the possibilities and all the permutations that might ensue from the decisions that you make. Always invite people in to give you wise advice. All right, here's a few more. This one addresses your future hopes and dreams. Proverbs 19:20. Listen to advice and accept discipline. And at the end, you will be counted among the wise. Note here that this is what it essentially says. Do you want to be wise? Then listen to counsel. Listen to counsel and you will be considered wise. How about this one? Where there is strife, there is pride. But wisdom is found in those who take advice. This is a relational proverb. Whenever you have a human relationship, there's going to be tension. There's going to be friction. There's going to be strife. And where you have strife, you can't help but being a bit prideful of having pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Now, it's helpful to know that if you're going to read the book of Proverbs, you probably should also become familiar with the book of 1 Kings. The book of 1 Kings is where you'll read about sort of the origin story of King Solomon. And it's in the story of Solomon that we see how Solomon got to be so wise in the first place. In 1 Kings 2, Solomon's father, King David, began to prepare Solomon to soon take over as king. And then in chapter 3, because of Solomon's youth, we see that Solomon goes to God for assistance. 1 Kings 3:7. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. So, even though there's no consensus around the issue and the exact information isn't found in the Bible, scholars believe that Solomon was about 12 years old when he ascended the throne. Anybody have a 12-year-old? Can you imagine a 12-year-old ruling the country? All right, so this is where things get really cool. Even though King Solomon could have asked God for anything he desired, look what Solomon asked God for. He said, give God's servant, in other words, he's talking to God, he's referring to himself as God's servant, give me, Solomon, a discerning heart to govern God's people, to distinguish between right and wrong, for who is able to govern this great people of yours? Well, that was the right thing to ask for because God was quite pleased. We move on a couple of verses. So God said to Solomon, since you have asked for this and not for long life, or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice. So imagine, I always think like when I see this, sorry, this is not a biblical reference, but my brain's weird. It's like a genie, you know, you rub the bottle and the genie comes out and he goes, I'm going to give you three wishes, right? Look what they're, I want to live forever, I want all the money in the world, and could you take care of my enemies for me? And those are big three right there. Solomon didn't ask for those things, the right thing. Solomon asked for the right thing, and God was pleased. God says to him, I will do as you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you. So God gave Solomon wisdom because he didn't ask for all the other stuff, and guess what? God gave him the other stuff. Anyway, interestingly, and kind of as an aside for our topic today, because Solomon asked God only for wisdom, and for discernment, God also promised Solomon I will give you what you have not asked for. There it is, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime, you will have no equal among kings. So Solomon, he came out of the gate just, man, great start. But sadly, later on in his life, Solomon decided what we would probably decide ourselves. Since I'm the wisest person in the world, I don't need to listen to anybody anymore. And from that moment on, Solomon made some really dumb decisions. One of the wisest people who ever lived made some ridiculously dumb decisions. Do you know how many wives Solomon had? 1,000. He had 300 wives of royal birth, and 700, they refer to them as concubines. Now, a concubine isn't what you might think it is. A concubine merely refers to a wife of common birth. So he had 1,000 wives, had children, I'm sure, with most of them. Can you imagine his schedule for the year? 1,000 wives. I can't even think about it. That was a bad idea. Many of those wives were from pagan kingdoms. They dragged Solomon away from God. It was a bad scene. He made some dumb decisions. And in his dumb decisions, Solomon sowed the seeds of Israel's economic and military destruction that would follow. And Solomon's bad decisions set the next generation of his family up for utter failure. The prophets warned him, don't do that. The law of God warned him, don't do that. The people around him would have warned him, but he wouldn't have listened, and he might have cut their heads off. But he didn't want to hear the counsel. He lost the thread that he knew before. Solomon did what many of us are prone to do. He undermined his own success, and in doing that, he undermined his own legacy. Now, I'm pretty confident that when I suggested to you that it's wise to ask for advice from wise people, I'm pretty confident you didn't go, oh my gosh, I never saw that coming. Wow, before I make an important decision, I should talk to somebody who knows more than I do. Oh, that's brilliant advice, Russell. Thank you for pointing that out. I never would have thought of that on my own. No, you would have. It's not exactly rocket science. I didn't tell you anything you couldn't have discovered on your own. But the question is, why is it that we typically don't do this on our own? I mean, we've all experienced enough times in our lives where we look back upon what we did and we go, dang, I shouldn't have done that. I should have saw that coming. Why do we do this? And how do we keep it from happening again? And while we're asking questions, here's another. We're all familiar with the fact that certain decisions with which we're faced are emotional decisions. And at least on some level, we're also familiar with the fact that emotion can hinder our ability to reason. So why are we consistently so hesitant to seek wise guidance on the important things in our life? Why would we ignore a principle that's so reasonable and so obvious and so apparent and would be so beneficial to our lives? Well, there are several reasons. The first is that we already know what wise people are going to say, right? We just don't want to hear it. I mean, that's really why we don't ask, right? I don't want to hear it. You've all been there and done that. That's one of the reasons we don't ask. The second reason comes straight from Solomon himself. Again, Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, Solomon, the wisest man in the world, didn't even take his own advice. And thereby he undermined his own authority. And he gave us a word to describe a person who knows what to do, but still chooses to not do it. Solomon described that person as what? A fool. A fool is a person who knows the difference between right and wrong and just chooses what's wrong. So if today you're in the middle of a decision and you already know what the wise people in your life would tell you to do, but you've simply decided not to do it, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but Solomon would say you're a fool. One of the other reasons we don't seek wise counsel is really just we're too private, right? I mean, that's really where we're individualists, we're Americans, we're Westerners. This is, you know, we're all on our own here, right? We're too private, but maybe it's better to say that we're too prideful. Many times we tell ourselves that our situation is nobody else's business. It's my money. It's my marriage. They're my kids. It's my job. This is nobody else's business. I'm not asking anybody for advice, and I'm certainly not going to listen to anybody else's advice. I mean, how many times has this gone through your head? Well, there's a problem with that mindset, and the problem is this. private decisions often have public consequences. What's made in private doesn't always stay in private. Personal decisions impact more than your person, especially if you're married, especially if you're a parent, especially if you work for somebody or if you are the boss. Every public scandal that we hear about, whether it's politicians or musicians or pastors or actors or just people in the community, every public scandal began with a private decision. Every embarrassing thing known about everybody who is anybody began with a personal, private decision, but they didn't stay private. Private decisions have public consequences. Personal decisions don't stay personal, and they involve and impact more people than just you, and it's all about pride. I don't need to be told what to do. You guys will like this one. I'm 16, already am grown up. I don't need anyone's advice. You ever meet a 16-year-old like that? I don't mean to pick on the 16-year-olds. I was like that when I was 16, too, so don't get me wrong. But come on, we needed help back then, but we were too prideful to ask. When we look back on the decisions we made at 16, don't you laugh about most of them? Man, oh man, I'm glad they weren't full-time, permanent decisions. But you know something? The same goes for when we look back when we were 21, or 31, or 41. No matter how old you are, one day you're going to look back on the bad decisions that you made, and you're going to ask yourself, what was I thinking? Remember what Solomon said, where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Now, here's one final truism before we wrap up this morning. Success is intoxicating, and failure is humiliating. This is why our pride keeps us from acknowledging and accepting and embracing outside advice, outside counsel. If you are super successful, the way the world works is that everybody thinks you must be smart about everything. That's how that works. And that makes it incredibly difficult for successful people to take advice from anyone. In fact, it's very difficult to even survive success because after a while, you really begin to believe your own press. You really think, I really must know everything. I am the bomb. Why would I ever seek anyone's advice? If you're super successful, even if you're marginally successful, if you're recognized in your field or your industry as being successful, your inclination will be to believe that since you know a lot about one thing, you're kind of an expert on all things, and naturally then you'll resist outside input, and you'll naturally resist feedback and counsel. Eventually, your intoxication with your own success will not serve you well in the end. And the flip side of that is true as well. Because failure is humiliating, that also keeps people from seeking necessary wise counsel. So if there's an area in your life where you feel inadequate, seeking counsel will just confirm that you're inadequate so you avoid it. That's why you resist it. That's what happened in King Solomon, and it didn't end well for him. But here's our problem. Success is intoxicating. Woohoo! I know everything about everything. I don't need counsel from anyone. And failure is humiliating. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not talking to a counselor. I'll figure it out on my own. But God says, no, that is not how I designed you. I designed you for community. You were born into community because you need community. As it said, you have two ears and one mouth. Use them in proportion. Listen. Don't talk so much. And the only way for you to overcome your inadequacy and the only way for you to maintain your success is to invite somebody into your area of weakness and learn and listen. Because where there's conflict, there's pride. I should have seen it coming. Well, somebody did see it coming. Somebody can see what you can't see. But the question is, are you going to invite them in? Wise people know what they don't know. Wise people aren't afraid to engage people who do know. Wise people know when the emotion and the appetites are so intense that they'd better hit the pause button, take a beat, and invite someone into the conversation with them. So in light of your past experiences, and your current circumstances, and your future hopes and dreams, listen. And God will use the voices of other people to guide you and to guard you and to ensure that you never have to look back on another season, another episode, another relationship, or another expenditure in your life and wonder, why didn't I see that coming? Amen? Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for preserving this ancient text, this 3,000-year-old text, as relevant today as it was 3,000 years ago. Father, I confess on behalf of all of us that we have enough pride in us to cause us to miss the signals, to miss the things that we shouldn't miss. So, Father, we ask if you would please give us the wisdom we need to know what to do with what we've heard, and then give us the courage to do it. And, Father, I pray for the man or the woman or the student who's here today with somebody they're having an issue with their spouse, with a significant other, with a parent. I pray for those people that when I was talking, they knew exactly where this needed to land in their life. And Father, I ask if you would give them, please give them courage, the courage to open up and say, I am ready to listen. Please, Father, give us the wisdom to know what to do and the courage to do it in Jesus' name.